Highways Voices, the podcast of Highways News, your one-stop destination for all the news about the highways and transport technology industries, and our must-read daily newsletter.
This week on Highways Voices, we find out about a new driverless vehicle project in Milton Keynes and talk about the wider subject of autonomous last-mile transport.
I'm firmly of the belief that you take small steps, and by small steps, we've got vehicles that are travelling at a much slower speed, in environments that are much safer, and importantly, probably carrying bunches of people rather than one or two people.
A guest from Australia joins us to tell us all about Omeo and global lessons in what we can and can't do with the technology, steering us in the right direction on this week's Highways Voices.
Highways Voices, in association with partner organisations ELCRIG, ADEPT, the Transport Technology Forum and ITS UK.
So Dean Zabrazak is our guest on Highways Voices today, and we'll hear from him after we've caught up with Highways News co-owner Adrian Tatum, who's been looking at some of the stories catching his eye on our website this week.
More than half of local road network in England and Wales is reported to have less than 15 years structural life left, as the amount needed to fix the backlog of carriageway repairs increases to a record high of £16.3 billion. This year's annual Local Authority Road Maintenance or Alarm Survey report, published this week by the Asphalt Industry Alliance, highlights the scale of the challenge that faces local authority teams who have a statutory responsibility to keep local roads safe but don't have the funds to do so. Despite local authority highway teams reporting an overall increase in carriageway maintenance budgets, they've been hit by the impact of rising costs due to inflation, meaning they have been able to do less. This has been compounded by the increasing frequency of extreme weather events, which together with accelerating the rate at which the network is deteriorating. Alarm data shows that only 40% of roads in England and Wales are classed as being in good structural condition, with the remaining 53%, more than 107,000 miles, now having less than 15 years structural life remaining. But in response, the life expectancy of roads in the UK could be increased and potholes significantly reduced if local authorities and their private sector contractors adopt a more proactive approach to highway maintenance alongside other treatments such as resurfacing. This would mean central government would eventually be spending far less on reactive repairs such as filling potholes by adopting prevention is better than cure approach. These are the thoughts of Paul Bass, Chief Executive of the Road Surface Treatments Association. This preventing is better than cure approach, so highway maintenance funding is better than papering over the cracks with pothole repairs, he said. Speaking ahead of the launch of this year's alarm survey, Mr. Boss said it had been demonstrated with clear evidence that using surface treatment saves costs and significantly reduces carbon, at the cost of reactive repairs continues to rise. And elsewhere, drivers across England will benefit from a further £38.3 million investment to improving the safety of 17 of the most high-risk roads in England, the Department of Transport has announced. The £38.3 million will deliver improvements on 17 roads and comes on top of the £147.5 million already invested to deliver life-saving improvements on 82 high-risk roads across England. Over a 20-year period, this funding will see significant reductions in fatal and serious injuries, as to much as 30.8% reduction on some roads. Improvements will include designing new junction roundabouts, improving signage and road markings, new road surfacing and landscape management, and improved pedestrian crossing. This round of funding is expected to save 385 lives over the next 20 years.
It's the email the industry waits for every lunchtime, our Highways News Midday Briefing. And you can get it too if you don't already, simply by going to highways-news.com/subscribe. On our site, you'll also find links to our X and LinkedIn feeds, so you'll always be up to date, because we are the only place you need to go for everything you need to know. We are Highways News.
Swarco improves quality of life by making the travel experience safer, quicker, more convenient and environmentally sound. From software as a service traffic management solutions to parking, VMS, EV charging and road marking too, find out how Swarco can deliver more efficient and safer traffic management. Swarco, the better way, every day.
This is one of those times as a journalist that I picked up a story just by knowing people. Today's podcast came about because my friend Dean Zabrazak, who is CEO of HMI Technologies in Australia and New Zealand and a former president of ITS Australia, got in touch with me a few weeks ago ago to see if Mrs. H and I fancied meeting up for a social evening while he and his wife were in the UK on business. We did indeed meet in London, and we were chatting about why they're in the UK, and I was told all about a project that I hadn't heard of. So the next day I called him on Zoom in his hotel room to find out more about how he came to be here.
Well, Paul, as you know, we've been good friends in the ITS world for quite a long time, and through all the contacts that we've made and the friends that we've made around the world, opportunities arise from time to time in the business. And a few years ago, one of our fellow friends, Dr. Moon from Korea, who you probably remember fondly, he had an opportunity to do some work in the UK with other partners. And he and his colleagues in South Korea pointed out to ourselves at Omeo that it might be good for us to be involved in such projects. And these projects being the Innovate UK, significant funding for CAV projects that are happening now. So we put our hand up, we showed interest. It was early days of the Omeo journey at the time. One thing led to another. We got involved in a consortium here in Milton Keynes. The initial one that we got involved in was quite large and involved a considerable sum of money from the UK government, which led to, I often remember the story, which led to us fronting an assessment panel, another town away from Milton Keynes, in front of a bunch of assessors on behalf of Innovate UK, asking us all about what we do, how we do it, where we live, what we do, who our firstborn is, and so forth. And in amongst that consortium were Navya and ourselves. The idea was that we were going to bring four or five vehicles each and see how they performed. And one of the comments that was made to us was, we're not too keen on sharing our money with the colonies, which was a little bit humorous at the time, but probably was pointed in that we didn't win the project. But not long after that, the same consortium, without our friends from France, was put together for a slightly scaled down version of the project, which we were fantastically happy and content to have won about, let's say, about June, July last year. So our project here involves probably a lot more communications than an autonomous vehicle. We are bringing autonomous vehicles for the sake of having a vehicle to test the communications. As you and I have both known for quite a while, deploying autonomous vehicles isn't just about bringing a vehicle, manufacturing wherever you like, bring a vehicle, bring it to a place and letting it run. It's about the vehicle being included into an ITS ecosystem, which involves roadside infrastructure, roadside to vehicle communications, and the management of both the vehicle and those infrastructure items. So here in Milton Keynes, we are partnering with the likes of BT, with Dell, the Milton Keynes Council, the SAT Catapult people, and ourselves in testing the reliability, the accuracy, and the viability of 5G terrestrial communications with autonomous vehicles. In the next year or so, we'll be deploying two of our vehicles onto a number of routes here within Milton Keynes to prove to everyone that everything works perfectly. Ultimately, the idea would be that if the council sees that it's viable and the government sees that it's safe and viable, that a service would be deployed in Milton Keynes running between the railway station all the way up to the centre, Milton Keynes Centre, centre of Milton Keynes, and then beyond it all the way down to Hotel Latour. So it's pretty much a linear route that would be established, but utilising autonomous shuttles that we manufacture.
Okay, let's rewind a second, Dean, to the birth of Omeo, I guess, because Omeo is quite a clever name, because you're CEO of HMI Technologies, and Omeo sounds a very grand name. And in fact, it's just HMI with an O at each end that in your logo, it looks like two wheels. So where did HMI start and how did you get involved in the autonomous pod game?
Well, HMI started way back in around about 2000. So we often say to our customers and partners that, you know, we haven't just been around in the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. We've actually been an ITS company developing ITS equipment since around about 2000. Mohammed and his brother Ahmed Hikmet in New Zealand created this company called HMI. And for the next 24 odd years, they have been developing, designing and manufacturing the large variable message signs, speed limit signs, lane use management signs, travel time signs that you see on all your motorways here in the UK. The difference is that we've been concentrating in our side of the world on deploying those signs in New Zealand, Australia, Taiwan, and so forth. So we've done really well in that business. We've attended a lot of World Congress, made a lot of friends, as you know. Then in 2015, I joined HMI from Vic Road, my highways agency equivalent in Melbourne, Australia. Yes, I started work as CEO of HMI, but before long, we discovered that in the future, our signs wouldn't just be communicating with drivers behind a steering wheel in a car, but ultimately, there wouldn't be any drivers because cars wouldn't have steering wheels, wouldn't have pedals, they would become autonomous. And so Mohammed, being the visionary that he is, he said, we need to be prepared for that because if we're going to continue selling and manufacturing signs, they will be needing to do something else. They'll be needing to be communicating with vehicles, not with drivers. So we initially purchased three French-made vehicles, brought them to Australia, showed them to our governments in Melbourne, Sydney, Christchurch. We probably, because we'd been an ITS company for a long time, we wanted to extend the capability of those vehicles. We wanted to demonstrate how they could communicate with infrastructure, drive through traffic signals, understand what phase they were in and so forth. Unfortunately, we couldn't do what we wanted to do with those vehicles. And as a result of our history of ITS electronics, telecommunications of our own, we said, how hard can it be? Maybe we could build our own. And so therefore, we set about building an autonomous vehicle stack. And after a while, we decided we needed to give it a name, give the product a name. And I remember distinctly sitting in my office in Melbourne being called by Mohammed and Ahmed, where they had some marketing people sitting in their office in Auckland. They'd been throwing around some, you know, various acronyms, you know, 4- and 5-letter acronyms. And all day long, they were coming back to me with things that I said, it doesn't sound good. That's no good. That's boring. And then all of a sudden, just by accident, somebody came up with, well, why don't we play around with HMI and an O at each end and call it OMIO, because it sounded like a word. And it sounded good. And then we realized, well, look, it's actually still HMI, but a wheel at each end with the O. And that was the start of OMIO way back in 2017.
Now, I remember chatting to you about it. And for the magazine that I edited at the time, I interviewed you for the issue that was released for the ITS World Congress, which would have been 2018 in Copenhagen. So, yeah. You know, this is a 5-year plus journey to get to where we are. Now, I remember that you had loads of ideas of things like different sized pods, but the idea that you could kind of virtually join them together and platoon them like a train. So there were loads of ideas that you had. Those ideas 5-6 years ago, how have they played out? What's worked and what necessarily maybe hasn't?
Yeah, well, they were ideas, and they're still very, very good ideas. I mean, we always prided ourselves in the manufacturing of our signs, and we do now, that we're a solutions provider, not simply just a manufacturer that stocks a lot of the same thing. As you know, in the roads game, particularly when you're dealing with highways agencies and so forth, suppliers don't just sit there and manufacture hundreds of the same item waiting for them to be ordered. You respond to a tender, a project, a specification, and oftentimes they're different from one to the next. So that's the way we're treating the manufacturing and deployment of our vehicles. Whenever we run into a customer, our first question is, what is the problem that you want to solve? And then we'll decide on what is the product that you need perhaps from us. So we're not necessarily going into it all the time saying, well, this is our product, this is what you're going to need. We've built an open architecture type vehicle, a vehicle that's modular and scalable. We've certainly focused, I suppose, in the last 5 years on developing and deploying our first model, which is the OMIO Lift, which is about 4.7 metres long, 2.2 metres wide, 2.4 metres high. It's the model that we're deploying here in Milton Keynes. We've deployed about 25 of those around the world, but we're always keeping in mind that if somebody wants a vehicle that's slightly longer or bigger, we will do that. And an example is that the vehicles that are being deployed here in Milton Keynes are 8-seater vehicles. A vehicle that we're sending to Finland is exactly the same external shape and size vehicle, but internally it's got 12 seats. So we've modified the seating arrangements in that vehicle to suit the customer's needs in Finland, which is great. And then you mentioned the platooning at JFK Airport in New York. We were asked by our customer to bring three vehicles there and demonstrate to them how those vehicles could operate in a platoon formation, meaning that they were effectively joined, but physically they weren't. And so we demonstrated three vehicles operating at 23 miles per hour with 6 foot separation between each vehicle. And that was quite a challenge, because none of these autonomous electric shuttles that you've seen in the world have operated that sort of speed before, nor have they operated that speed at such a close proximity. And we did a really good job. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey were really pleased with what they saw. The vehicles operated well. They did what they were asked to do. And now we're entering into the car parks 8 and 9 at JFK Airport in the next month or so to undertake a service using autonomous shuttles.
It's interesting the timescales you've talked about. You've been doing this for a long time. You know, you've got 25 vehicles out and about around the world. Given that I remember being at a meeting in California, in Santa Clara, which is near San Francisco, back in October 2014, so we're coming up 10 years, when the guy who was in charge of the Google car at the time, a phenomenally intelligent man called Chris Urmson, stood up and said that his 10-year-old son would never need a driver's license, because by the time he was 16, 6 years later, there would be no need for human-driven vehicles. The timescales have obviously slipped quite significantly, because I think that we could get a certain percentage of the way there on the autonomous vehicles, but it's that last few hurdles that has been the hardest bit. Where do you see the timescales going for actually being able to really have mass everyday use of this, rather than the trial projects that we see often and we're seeing at the moment in Milton Keynes?
Yeah, it's really something that I've been conscious of for a long time too. I remember sitting at VicRoads back in 2012, telling our CEO at the time, look, cooperative ITS is here, autonomous vehicles are going to be here. We need to deploy equipment all over the countryside, because they'll be here in 2 or 3 years. And here we are in 2024, and we haven't quite gotten there. And look, it's great for people to have vision, and great for people to sort of aim high. We will get there. There are certain obstacles, obviously, in the way. In those early days, people were visionary and saying they'd be with us very soon. But, you know, the technology has sort of evolved slowly, but it is also evolving quite quickly, in that it changes very quickly from day to day, in that it improves. But probably the biggest hurdle has been the safety aspect, that all the agencies, all the authorities, all the jurisdictions want to actually nail down completely. I get a little bit frustrated, as you probably know. You know, I go to world congresses and speak or moderate at many, many events, and I get frustrated in the road safety sense. It's an area that I've worked in all my working career, in that all countries tolerate the enormous death that occurs on our roads, you know, by vehicles that are driven by men and women that are petrol powered and so forth. And yet, you know, 40,000 people dying on US roads is accepted as the norm. But oftentimes, if you see a autonomous shuttle being involved, or any autonomous vehicle, not just a shuttle, being involved in the simplest of little incidents, probably not even having to do anything to do with the technology, but somebody else ran into it, it becomes headline news. So manufacturers and suppliers are very reluctant to put their vehicles out there, and jurisdictions are very reluctant to allow them to put their vehicles out there until they consider the technology to be absolutely perfect. And I find that a little bit frustrating, because perfection is an ideal that is very rarely achieved. So here we are today, and I've got to say that the likes of Waymo and Cruise have done a great job. They've done a great job in bringing this vision to reality in a lot of places in the world. But I think they've gone to the point where they've tried to develop a product that does everything everywhere for everybody all of the time, tried to get to the ultimate driving task in one giant leap, rather than taking small steps. And I'm firmly of the belief, it's probably because I'm biased because of the vehicles that I'm involved in, but I'm firmly of the belief that you take small steps, and by small steps, we've got vehicles that are traveling at a much slower speed, in environments that are much safer, and importantly, probably carrying bunches of people rather than one or two people. So we're focusing, Omeo, we're focusing on the first mile, last mile aspect of the transport network and transport chain, which we believe is an area that you can work on reasonably safely. You can achieve an outcome. You've taken one step, which ultimately leads to the next step. So personally, I don't think that we're going to have every vehicle on UK motorways or Australian or American motorways driving autonomously anytime soon, because there's a long way to go with that. However, the types of vehicles that my company is deploying and our competitors are deploying as well, I think that's an easy win that we're progressing through. And you said we've deployed 25 vehicles. Yes, it's a tough task. 2 years of those 5 or so years that we've been talking about have been during COVID. So it was very difficult in those times. And we actually had our first sales of the Omeo vehicle right at the start of the COVID pandemic. So in round about February, March of 2020, our friends in South Korea said to us, okay, here's an order for 2 Omeo electric shuttles. And we said, great, let's manufacture them. Let's get them over to you. So away they went over the seas into Incheon and Seoul, and we were all locked up in our houses, the Koreans, ourselves, the English, and everybody else. Those vehicles were deployed and commissioned over Zoom, the way we are speaking now. So we are having English-speaking engineers in Auckland speaking with English-speaking South Korean engineers in Seoul, scratching their heads, tearing their hair out, but eventually getting there and deploying equipment of this type over Zoom, something that, you know, you would never have dreamt of, nor would you have had the capacity to do if the pandemic had occurred 20 years earlier. But we achieved that, and I think we're in that trajectory now where that initial hurdle has been overcome and deployment is starting to happen.
Now, you mentioned your time in Vic Roads, and I remember now you and I, we'd probably been mates for 2 or 3 years before it actually dawned on us that we'd met years before the ITS World Congress in Melbourne when we first got to know each other. When I was working in a traffic news company and I pitched in your office in Melbourne a traffic reporting app that we had developed, and we had quite a long conversation about it. And I also remember that I walked out of that meeting thinking, this is a man you can't give BS to, because he's going to see right through it. So you had to be completely honest. What would you have made of you going in to pitch to the Vic Roads you the concept of driverless pods? You know, what would you have been open to hearing from yourself, so to speak?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Paul. As you probably know, you've known me for a long time. Back then in Vic Roads, you had that leverage to be able to try things. And that's what I was proud of. And I think that's what we were proud of, in that as a road organisation throughout Australia, the rest of the states actually regarded us quite highly because we were doing things that others weren't doing. We were, you know, one of the first organisations that had travel time signs on our freeways way back in the 1990s. As you said, when you came to see me, we were the first road agency that had an external company in our traffic management centre that was reporting about travel time and incidents. So we took a punt. And one of the things that I loved doing was taking a punt on something that wasn't going to break the bank. Provided it was safe, it was worth trying. And if it came off and it was good, it was worth deploying more. So I think it would have been a tough discussion. But if it was a discussion that was seen as being something that was good for Melbourne, good for Victoria, that could ultimately lead to better safety outcomes, I would have had a try and would have had a go at it. Yeah.
And finally, Dean, because we're nearly out of time, I'm just interested in the fact that there you are, based in Melbourne. You've got your boss living in Auckland. You are an Antipodean company doing a lot in Asia Pacific, but these opportunities have now opened up this side of the planet. How on earth can you actually be able to scale up to deliver all over the world when you're based, as all of us that do the flights between London and Australia know, it's a long, long way away?
Yeah. Look, we realised, you know, when we deployed our first one or two vehicles, it wasn't too hard. You know, you've got a vehicle in Korea, you send somebody over on a flight, get the job done and go back to home base. But now we've got vehicles in the US, in JFK, as I said. We're going to start manufacturing in California. We've got the vehicles, quite a number of them in South Korea. We've got vehicles in Luxembourg, in Amsterdam, in Finland, and quite a number here in the UK. So our plan is that we cannot continue to fly me or Mohammed or any of our team all over the world to support those projects. Our plan is to develop support teams in those countries. And I've got to say, our director here in the UK, Ian Pulford, is an amazing, amazing guy. He's got a long history in telecommunication and robotics. He worked for BT in Japan and here in the UK for many, many years. He has got a number of projects here, and he's realised that he cannot rely on the support coming from New Zealand and Australia. A, it's a long way away. B, it's very expensive for people to get here. And C, they've got other commitments in other places as well. So he has already built himself up a team of 10 or 12 university graduates from here in Milton Keynes, from Cranfield University. And so he's building around himself a local Omeo team. My colleague, Robert Sikora, who you know as well, who's our director in Europe, has got a similar problem that he needs to solve, in that now he has vehicles in three countries in Europe, a little bit further distance from what Ian has to cope with, but he has to develop a team around him to provide that local support. And as we said, with manufacturing in the US, we're doing that because to do business in the US, buy America is king. So we cannot rely on building our vehicles in other countries. They must be built in the US. So our ultimate game plan, obviously we're not that big a company. We're not a multi-billion dollar corporation. But our ultimate plan is for, you know, the brains trust of the development of Omeo, where it started is where it will probably continue to be. But there will be centers of excellence throughout the world in different countries, be it the US, in Europe or the UK.
Well, you mentioned Amsterdam. We've got Intertraffic in Amsterdam next month. So there will, even if you don't make it back to this hemisphere, Dean, hopefully I'll meet up with some Omeo HMI people in Amsterdam. And you and I look forward to catching up and having a further chat on Highways Voices when we get to the ITS World Congress in Dubai.
Fantastic. Paul, really great pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
My mate, well, we can use that word because he's an Aussie and it's a thing there, Dean Zabrazak, who is CEO of HMI Technologies, talking about the project his Omeo driverless pod solution is delivering in Milton Keynes and what will and won't happen with the tech over the coming years. We'll catch up with him, as I say, in Dubai when I bring podcasts from there to you later in the year.
Highways Voices, the podcast from highwaysnews.com. Highwaysnews.com.
Adrian's accolade to come, but first, let's catch up with news from our partners.
Highways Voices, with the latest news and events from our partner organisations Elkrig, Adept, the Transport Technology Forum and ITS UK.
So by the time this podcast is live, we should know which local authorities have been awarded a share of £40 million of money to improve traffic signals as part of the government's plan for drivers. The money's on top of £10 million that's being shared out among all eligible English authorities and will either fix obsolete equipment or make systems operate more efficiently. Of course, all the details will be on the Highways News website as soon as it's out. The process has been managed by Elkrig for the Transport Technology Forum. And talking of Elkrig, it's welcomed TCS Geotechnics as its latest associate member. TCS Geotechnics are a provider of specialist geotechnical products for the construction and civil engineering industries. And the company says it's joined Elkrig because its professional platform provides TCS with the ideal vehicle to introduce Elkrig members to the significant financial and sustainable benefits available from a wide variety of sustainable and cost-effective geotechnical and landscaping products and systems. News from Adept now, and the Future Highways Research Group has just published an updated prospectus which collates many of the available tools and services that have been developed through research and application. Together, they provide various tools and methodologies to support Adept to local authority members with the challenges facing the highway sector, Adept Improving Services, which is a research organisation based at Cranfield University, have been in partnership since 2018 and deliver the FHRG. All local highway authorities can now access expertise, support and toolkits on issues including value for money assessments, carbon footprint assessments and reduction options, future service delivery options studies, highway services optimisation, mutuality reviews, future fleet services reviews and strategic innovation assessments. The main aim is to give members a chance to support strategic transformation, drive the implementation of sector-based innovation and deploy continuous value for money improvements. And finally, ITS UK has announced the Intelligent Transport Address is back. Shashi Verma, Chief Technology Officer at Transport for London, will give the second annual address, presenting his vision for the future of the transport industry and how technology can support the sector going forward. His address title is Smart Ticketing, Mobility and the Future of Transport. Where are we and where we're going? It takes place on the 21st of May at AWS's offices near London's Liverpool Street station.
Highways Voices with Paul Hutton and Adrian Tatum.
Nearly time to go, but let's first tip our hat to someone or some people doing amazing things in the industry, because it's time for
Adrian's Accolade.
My accolade this week goes to the 9 innovative new ideas that could help manage hazards on motorways and major A roads. They have been selected by National Highways to receive up to £90,000 funding to develop their concepts, improve safety. It follows the launch of a competition by National Highways to find new ways to help protect road users by better managing hazard. What better way of spending their funding? And that's one of the reasons why they're my accolade this week. You can find out who all the winners are on www.highways-news.com.
So thank you, Adrian, for those worthy winners, and that will do it for Highways Voices this week. Thanks very much for listening. We'll have one more to come before Easter, and I'll bring you that next Wednesday, so do join Adrian and me then.
Highways Voices. Join us again next week for more insights from those that matter in the industry.